Hi there, this is Adam Gower, founder at GowerCrowd.com, and you are listening to Dream Chasers, interviews with the future.
If I own myself, do I own the product of my labor? Does another entity, whether that be an individual, a government, a business, do they have a higher right to the product of my labor than I do? I would say no.
And now, a word from our sponsor, Liberty Real Estate Fund. Liberty Real Estate Fund is creating the world's first single-tenant net lease security token fund by joining blockchain technology and 30 years of institutional real estate investment experience to deliver stable, diversified, tax-efficient returns combined with liquidity, security, and transparency. Michael Flight, co-founder of Liberty Real Estate Fund, or also known as LibertyFund.io, likes to quote Peter Thiel, "Look at what in your industry is inevitable, but no one sees coming." The founders at LibertyFund.io asked the question, what if you could combine all the benefits of wealth creation, inflation protection, and cash flowing income of real estate with the liquidity and ease of worldwide use presented by Bitcoin? It became apparent that blockchain technology would disrupt, but also enhance the real estate investment world. So, the guys at Liberty spent a few years and mucho dollars researching, designing, and building a superior investment strategy to get the best aspects of commercial real estate, which again include wealth generation, inflation protection, tax benefits, the ability to leverage your investment, tangible value, and cash flowing regular income with all of the benefits of blockchain, including security, transparency, cost efficiencies, worldwide distribution, liquidity, and immediate transfers. Don't miss the next big trend. You can get their new free Real Estate Blockchain Investing 2020 report at LibertyFund.io. Yes, that's LibertyFund.io. Folks, this is a quality report and it's free. Be sure to tell them that Adam at Dream Chasers sent you. Thank you. This is Dream Chasers, episode 122 with Derek Reiner. Hey guys. Hi, Grandma. This is Adam Carswell, and welcome to Dream Chasers, interviews with the future. On Dream Chasers, we bring next-level talent to the light. Thank you for tuning in. Now let's get straight to the interview. Hey guys, this is Adam Carswell, and today I'm joined by Derek Reiner. Derek is a real estate entrepreneur and podcast host. He was born and raised in the Houston, Texas area, went to Sam Houston State University, and is working on his master's right now, actually, at the University of Houston. Derek now lives in Tomball, Texas, which is a suburb of Houston. Derek, thank you for coming on the show. And do you have any opening remarks for our listeners?
Thanks for having me, Adam. You know, I'd really just like to say that it's been a pleasure getting to know you over the last 2 years. Adam and I actually met through the Cashflow Connections Mentor Program. He was one of the first people, along with Hunter Thompson, that I really had the privilege of getting to know within the commercial real estate industry. That connection and taking that action is really something that launched the snowball effect of what I have going on now.
Yeah, really excited to talk about an array of topics here today, guys. I'm sure if you clicked on this episode, if you're like Derek and I, you're already excited to hear what we're going to talk about. But Derek's got some really cool things going on in his world professionally too that are brand new. I've said on LinkedIn, kind of given a forecast, guys, if you're in commercial real estate, keep your eyes on Derek. He's going to be a top thought leader in 2021. I'm calling it now. And also, you know, I just want to take a step back too. I had a call yesterday with Hunter Thompson, who Derek just referenced, who's, you know, boss, friend, mentor of mine. And we had a call and he's like, you know what? He's like, I've stayed away from it for a while, but I'm going to start posting my podcasts and my podcast interviews on YouTube. You know, as I've grown Dream Chasers, I've always stayed away from posting on YouTube, mainly from the time commitment that came along with it in regards to editing and whatnot. But, you know, after my call with Hunter, he was like, you know, it's just leaving too much content and information on the table to not be doing it. So I am going to implement right after the day after I hear my mentor tell me what he's going to do. Guys, thank you. This Dream Chasers is now back on YouTube, and really, for the first time ever, you're getting to see our faces too, Derek. So you're the the poster child of this YouTube debut. If you guys are tuned in on the podcast platforms, whether it's Apple, Spotify, you name it, you are going to have a more condensed, edited version with, you know, ads and whatnot. But if you're here on YouTube watching us, like, this is live raw footage. So if we make any mistakes, like, you can laugh along with us. So anyways, yes, that's some context there. And Derek kind of mentioned how we know each other too. One other thing that this is a little bit of an appetizer for the direction we're taking this conversation. But one thing that I know, looking back on it, Derek and I got along very well. And this makes perfect sense because we met through Hunter. We have some very similar worldviews. You know, I don't know if I would ever be someone to proudly say I am this, for example, but there are a lot of principles of libertarianism that I think are just fantastic. I think a lot of the world has no idea about a lot of these ideas and philosophies. So Derek, I'm going to flip it back over to you now and kind of share maybe some memories that you had of us talking about our worldviews when we first met.
You know, I really went through an interesting transition that brought a lot of this about when I was in the military. It's in regard to why do we believe the things that we believe? What are our first principles and how do we get there? And some of the conversations that we had really, you know, they revolved around the concept of self-ownership, both having the responsibility of your actions, but the freedom to choose what your actions should be as long as they fit within the worldview that I think you and I both share. And that is, you know, it really stems from the concept of libertarian ideology, which is self-ownership and the non-aggression principle. It stems from, you know, the conversations that we've had of, you know, who is the legitimate owner of your body? You know, I would say that I own my body. Occam's razor, a principle used in scientific methodology, essentially says that the thing that is the most direct cause, the thing that makes the most sense, should be what we go with. And, you know, I tell my hands to move as they are now. No one else can do that besides me. I know how that essentially I send signals, you know, through my brain to my hands. And, you know, it's through the kind of these just fundamental logical conclusions that you can say, like, you own yourself. And then what are the logical implications from that? If I own myself, do I own the product of my labor? Does another entity, whether that be an individual, a government, a business, do they have a higher right to the product of my labor than I do? I would say no. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of our conversations really, they stemmed from philosophical ideology on what makes us drive. And for me, it's such a freeing thought to say that, you know, I own myself, I own my action, I own the position that I put myself in. And if those lead to a negative consequence, then I own that too.
Well said, well said. And I think that's, you know, do you own the, I don't know the exact phrase you use, but, you know, the fruits of your own labor, do you own that? You should own all of it, right? And that's why I'm wearing this shirt right here, guys. Taxation is theft. Go to ix9.shop and buy yourself one. We do deserve to own the rights or the fruits of our own labor. And I think we don't realize, I was listening to a guy named Myron Golden speak the other day. And he did just a presentation where, you know, kind of just writes taxes on the whiteboard. And basically he's like, do you guys all realize here that half of what you make is going to the government? He's like, actually, no, I take that back. More than half of what you make, because you're paying half your salary in taxes. And then you don't realize when you go to the store, you get taxed again. When you go to, it's like, so everyone's getting double taxed. We don't realize it. And I don't really know if this interview is going to be the one to save the world, but hopefully we just get people start thinking in a different direction. But guys, this takes us again, the direction of the topic of our interview. Derek, it is now time to step into the next level chamber. Derek, the topic of our conversation is creating freedom for you and your people, regardless of who's running the world. I'm really excited to zone in on this because I think there couldn't be a more perfect time to have a conversation around this topic with, you know, everything going on in the world. We got the elections going on. Try not to give too much publicity to the elections, but, you know, you can't ignore it. With the elections happening, I think a lot of people like to point fingers and think that, we'll just say this as an example, Joe Biden or Donald Trump is the reason why they can't do XYZ. And now that I say that, the first thing that comes to mind for me is anyone who would be thinking that way needs to figure out how they can go through a mindset change. And that's like easier said than done. But if you're going to think that it's someone else's fault why you can't do something, you need to go back to what Derek just said, which is that principle of ownership, extreme ownership. And so taking a dive into a little bit of what you're doing personally, Derek, I know you have your syndications firm, Rhino Capital Investment, you have your podcast, you have your job that you, that your job, I don't know if you want to go into details about your job, but you know, basically I think you're a great example of how there's someone in our society preparing and creating a free future for you and your family. So go ahead. And I know I just threw a lot out at you there, but feel free to follow up on it.
I'd like to maybe take a step back and start off about 5 years ago. I was in, you know, so I had joined the military, and I, at the time, you know, I thought it was a very noble action where I could essentially, you know, serve my country, be a part of something greater than myself while also setting myself up for the future. And so even though when I joined the military, I didn't think of it from that perspective, I was positioning myself even back then. And so fast forward, you know, I was a sergeant in the Army, just shy of 7 years. I was a sergeant for 4 years. I had essentially established myself where I thought I had a firm foundation to a successful career in the military. And I ended up being medically discharged. And so all of a sudden, having a wife, a daughter at the time, expecting our third coming up in March.
Congratulations.
Thanks. We, you know, all of a sudden I was in a place where I had absolute uncertainty to my future, and it was terrifying, you know? And so I started applying a lot of the skill set that I'd learned in the military to my own personal life and taking that ownership of my actions. And so long story short, I was able to go from not knowing what I would be doing, but following my passion, which, so my undergraduate was in economics. Actually, I earned an honors degree in economics, concentrating within finance and economics. Using that, I'd actually, you know, I realized I came through commercial real estate through the understanding of business cycle theory and how that affected the real estate cycle. You know, really the first overlying thought that I had sitting through a monetary economics course when we were discussing business cycle theory came to terms with how real estate could be advantageously positioned throughout any time of the cycle, just purely from the theoretical underpinnings. And while there's many more complexities than that, it was such an enlightening thought to have. And what I mean by that is, let's say you're at a point in the business cycle where you've just gone, let's say a given region, society has just gone through a recession. And throughout that period of a business cycle, you would essentially see cap rate expansion as values start to fall, regardless of what's happening to net operating income. And so when you're young in a new cycle and you've just gone through a value reset, so to speak, you know that despite there being little change in net operating income, you can expect to realize a positive gain in value simply associated with moving throughout the cycle. Now, what that means from a theoretical perspective is it's much less risky to further leverage your investment. Now, apply that same mentality maybe towards the end of a cycle. We've just seen cap rate compression, values have risen. Now there's more uncertainty about what the future values will hold. You know, are we going to see a cap rate expansion and have values decrease, kind of historically known with how we see real estate cycles? And so with that mentality, you can take a step back and say, okay, well, instead of maybe having a thesis of value creation through theoretical underpinnings of the business cycle, now we can take a lower loan to value and have a more conservative investment where we really position ourselves for cash flow. And so having that mentality, understanding that nature of real estate, but not having any formal background in real estate finance, which is just such a different beast than mainstream finance, I knew I needed to position myself to surround myself with people who were doing what I wanted to do. I actually, you know, at the time I was at Ernst & Young as a quality assurance associate analyst, and I'd gained some financial experience working on the internal verification of application controls, but I knew that was not where my passion was. And so I'd planned to stay there for 2 to 3 years and then perhaps pursue my MBA. Well, 5 months into being there, my wife was actually given a full ride scholarship. It allowed her to have her master degree paid for, to the point where all we had to do was relocate to within the region that Sam Houston offered the program. His, you had to essentially be with a partner school that she could work at throughout that year. So I used that reset in my life as a way to immediately start positioning myself. And what I did was I reached out to Hunter Thompson. I had been listening to his podcast for a year and a half or so. I had an introduction into commercial real estate from that regard, but I knew that would not be enough if I wanted to be at a firm that dealt with institutional quality real estate. I knew I needed to bridge the gap in my education. And so I joined, I reached out to him and he let me know that he was considering officially launching the Cashflow Connection Mentor Program. And so I actually had an introductory call with yourself and with him. And that's really where we started to get to know each other. And I realized, you know, from that day, it's like the content I got out of his course was phenomenal. But I think the key to his course is understanding the network you're putting yourself in by surrounding yourself with like-minded individuals who share a pursuit of a common goal. There was so much that came out about that. And so, like I said, I transitioned to Houston with my wife and I immediately went into pursuing my MBA full time. I always joke, you know, I was taking 15 hours that semester. It was all introductory coursework for the MBA. But I always joke that I took 18 hours because I considered that mentor program to be a sixth class. Mm-hmm. And I got so much out of it. You know, I always joke. So when I had 101 hours out of my 131 at my undergrad, that I completed after I got out of the military. And I attained a 3.97 GPA during that time. And I always joke, you know, the only B's I've ever made, one was when I was full-time summer school at my undergrad, I was renovating my own house about 30 hours per week, you know, driving an hour each way to school. And it was just crazy busy. I got a B, you know, oh well. But then I also, the only B I've ever made in my MBA was that first semester because I prioritized the thing that I knew would move the needle over the monotonous coursework that was just seen as the foundation coursework for that program. And it was, you know, what's your opportunity cost? And I knew for me that I would rather devote myself to my passion and get by in my other courses. And so what that actually set me up to do was, you know, after completing the mentor program and finishing that semester, I started interviewing and I actually received an offer to join Altus Group. So Altus really does so much. They do, you know, Altus actually has Argus Enterprise, which is a commonly used commercial real estate financial modeling software. And then they also really get into data analytics. And then I actually work within global advisory. And so what I've been able to do within advisory is assist my team in the valuation management process, which includes appraisal, review, and appraisal management of our clients' institutional quality assets. And so by taking the time to get into the mentor program and really align my time with what the best use would be, I was actually able to drop down to part-time in my MBA. And now I work full-time within that field and I'm getting just amazing experience to the world of institutional quality real estate. And it's really set myself up where, you know, by having that hustle in the beginning, I've now been able to make Altus Group my priority as I continue my education and I'm continuing my education on a part-time basis, but it's so much more valuable because by the time I finish my MBA and, you know, I draw often on leadership and management experience I gained in the military, but you can't go into a new industry despite having that experience if you don't fundamentally understand the new industry you're going into. And so by taking that initiative, I've set myself up so that once I finish my MBA, I'll have absolutely amazing experience working on multiple portfolios for more, you know, just ranging from industrial, multifamily, retail, office. It's just been absolutely an amazing experience. And it all came about through that initial undertaking. And, you know, since then, I've got to a place where I've realized, you know, I have so much value that I can provide others. And so I'm launching Capital Stack with Derek Reiner. What we're going to do in Capital Stack is really break down commercial real estate. We're going to talk about everything from the investing side to underwriting to everyone who works within various aspects from the legal side, from, you know, leasing, from just, there's so many, many things that you can get into that, you know, I've realized that with my understanding of commercial real estate, I can have so many different people on and getting just into in-depth conversations regarding commercial real estate to just provide value to people. But what I'm also doing is, you know, a key takeaway from Hunter's program was, you know, what is real estate syndication? How do we effectively raise capital for real estate deals to help really, you know, pool investors together to go and acquire an asset that they might not otherwise have been able to achieve on their own? And so that's an additional service I'm doing through my investment firm, Rhino Capital Investments, is where, you know, I want to establish relationships with people where we can partner and look at offerings together, you know? And so the name of my podcast, Capital Stack, is really a play on words between the debt and equity structure of an investment in real estate, but also the human capital it takes to be successful in your endeavors. And so I'm really wanting to use that as my initial platform to go get started and really start just building my brand and, you know, kind of giving back some of the knowledge that I've developed over the last 2 years and, you know, the amazing experience I've had with just, you know, the opportunities that I've positioned myself for.
Yeah. Thank you for the context there. So guys, if you didn't catch that, I'm sure we're going to have plenty of links in the show notes and a way to follow up, and you guys can tune into Derek's show. Actually, is Capital Stack live yet? This interview will be going live actually close to a week from today. So
yeah, I'm finishing getting some branding stuff together and finishing the website, but yeah, we should be live within the next week or two.
Okay. So stay tuned for Capital Stack, guys. I had a great time on there with Derek. I'm honored to be one of his first guests. And you know, I do want to bring it back. I want to tie it back a little bit to the, you know, just creating that freedom. What you're saying and what I'm getting is, you know, you were medically discharged from the military. You know, during your time there, we'll say in Afghanistan, for example, because I think that's where it was, you noticed some things that maybe, like, they seemed like they were being forced upon the people there and it just wasn't a good fit. But because of the U.S.'s big presence, it had to do with cell phones or something, right? What was you've got a cool analogy with that.
You know, what I really noticed in Afghanistan, I actually draw back to my time in Afghanistan as a big development of myself. Not only is it really where I first started having economic thoughts, but also it was, you know, I broadly claim that that's where I gained so much of my multicultural experience, you know, working with people of Afghanistan, Poland, Germany, so many places where I had an opportunity to just learn from people that had such a different background than myself. And it was truly an eye-opening experience. But yeah, you know, so despite being in a war zone, I saw first world technology being injected into an area where it had historically not been. And so I can take a step back. You know, if you go across the states, you commonly see small towns every 5, 10, 15 miles. And today that infrastructure is really not quite needed like that. But the reason it existed in that sense was before things, you know, really started to come about through our Industrial Revolution, it would be quite common for those small towns to act as a hub of commerce for people within, let's say, a 5-10 mile radius of that town. And so you would see people coming into those towns to trade, to buy, you know, to sell, to do so many things. But they would also, you know, if you're going one town to another, it might be a day's wagon ride, you know, if you're taking your family or if you are hauling goods. And so you see a lot of that in Afghanistan as well. And what I realized was through the injection of first world technology into that country, I wondered what the benefit would be from the sense, you know, over the last 100 plus years since, let's say, most first world countries first started going through their Industrial Revolution, it's taken that long of a time to get to where we're at now. So how is it going to impact people in a third world country where they're living, you know, let's say below the global poverty line? How is that going to expedite their rise out of poverty? And those thoughts are really what I attribute to being like the foundational thoughts that drew me into economics and wanting to better understand the way the world worked. You know, there's so many studies out there now, but it's, you know, it's actually counterintuitive in a sense, but when you go in and you provide something for free, not only are you skewing the price mechanism of what you're offering, but you're actually disincentivizing a local market from picking up and building that, right? And so I've taken the economic thoughts from where I started, kind of now how I understand more formal economics. And, you know, I would always tell people there's so many schools of economic thought. One I would highly recommend that people go and check out is the Austrian School of Economic Thought. Now, it's really, you know, taking that multicultural experience and getting to a point where, you know, I have my business background today. I have my real estate background. I definitely want to incorporate going global again and being a part of building that community, those communities all over the world up. You know, Adam Smith, a classical economist, has a famous quote. He says, "It is not from the benevolence of the butcher, the brewer, the baker that we expect our dinner, but their regard to their own self-interest." And so that's one thing I want to do is I want to form contacts across the world who know different regions so much more intimately and then partner with them to say, you know, hey, you know, yeah, I want to raise capital for real estate, but, you know, as I go, I would also really like to become more of an angel investor. And I would like to really provide capital in a way that's going to lead to sustained growth and build and bringing people out of poverty. And so that's a major thesis of my long-term investment.
Yeah. Investments. There you go. It's people buy not what you do, they buy why you do it. And knowing that that is a big part of the direction you're heading with your company is huge. I mean, especially taking, as you said, taking the view of, you know, not just injecting it into and basically, you know, forcing this technology, forcing this way of thinking into a society that's not used to it. Because again, as you said, that doesn't really produce much fruit. If anything, is counterintuitive. But, you know, what's the phrase, you know, teaching someone how to fish. That's the direction that, you know, I see you going with Rhino Capital. So that's great. And I think that's one thing that we can all learn from. I could keep going. I was trying to get you to talk a little bit more, you know, risky politics and stuff, but we're running out of time. So guys, you could talk, you can follow up with Derek and I at another time after this. Anyways, we did a fantastic job today going live. Everyone who's joined us here on YouTube, thank you for, you know, for bearing with us if we did make any mistakes along the way.
And, you know, I'd like to say too, I'd be happy to come back on and really take a deeper dive into philosophy and what shapes my actions and the way I look at some of the things I was a part of in the past.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Because I'm sure you've seen some things that most of us don't know are going on in the world. But anyways, Derek, we're closing it out. Can you give a shout out to someone that you've never given a shout out to before?
Somebody that had a profound impact on my life while I was living a completely different life was First Sergeant David Folks. First Sergeant Folks was my battery, which a battery is essentially a company, but for air defense, you know, we're crazy, called it our own thing. So our first sergeant for our battery, he was a pivotal influence in me first kind of getting to that mindset of I'm going to position myself as well as I can. I made sergeant in 1 week shy of my 3-year mark. And it's usually typical for someone to take 4 to 5 years to make sergeant. And so David Folks, he really was an inspiration to me. He pushed me to be better. He expected nothing less of my best because he knew I could do it. And I'd like to say thank you and give him a shout out for what he really inspired in me, you know, going on 9 years ago.
There you go. David, was it Folks?
David Folks.
David Folks. Thank you, David, for raising up Derek Reiner. Well, guys, that is all the time we have for today. Thank you for tuning in. Derek, what is the single, if you had to give out one way, single best way for anyone tuned in to follow up and get in touch with you?
Sure. Shoot me an email to my email. It is Derek, D-E-R-R-I-C-K, at Rhino Capital Investments. And that is R-Y-N-O, capitalinvestments.com.
Boom. There you go, guys. Derek Reiner on his Dream Chasers debut. Who knows? Maybe we'll bring him back and go down some more rabbit holes. I encourage anyone listening today, if you like this kind of outside of the box thinking, to go back. I want to say somewhere in the 70s and I think episode 49 as well. We have some deep, long format conversations with some close friends of mine, John Caldwell and Nadir Price. And that just, you know, just popped in my head right there. Those were some great chats, more philosophical. So thank you for tuning in to Dream Chasers, Interviews with the Future. We will catch you in the next episode. Remember, in all you think, say, and do, take it to the next level. Thank you so much for investing your time with us here today. Quick call to action. If you enjoyed today's show, please be sure to share, subscribe, or leave us a rating. It really helps a ton with the SEO and visibility of the show. Thank you guys once again, and remember, take it to the next level.